When I tell you, I had to work so hard to get this episode out, the devil was working even harder to try to keep this episode in the dark. I will spare you the details, but just about everything you could imagine got in our way of getting this important conversation out to you. We had multiple tech issues. We had scheduling issues. We had illness, we had kids interrupting, you name it, it happened. And so I'm just elated that this episode is finally coming out. And I know this is about birth control. A lot of my listeners are pregnant right now. If that's you, if you're pregnant right now, this might be the last thing on your mind. But believe me, the birth control question is gonna come up sooner than you think, probably before you even meet your baby. Like, you're going to have to think about your next pregnancy before this pregnancy is even over, because most hospitals are asking the birth control question, asking what form of birth control are you going to be using after this? Are you ready for this? They're asking you this while you are in labor. I am not even kidding. With my last baby, they asked me in triage while I was in transition. That is not a time to be making decisions about such a big topic and a decision that could potentially have a lot of risk involved. So you need to get informed on this topic right now. And this episode is actually a great place to start. So the article that we're talking about is from the Washington Post. And they said in the article that women are spreading quote unquote misinformation about birth control. And so many women in our community are pissed, very mad about this article, myself included, our guest included. So this is why I asked my good friend Carly Hartwig on today to talk about it. And we're going to talk about the real reason women are not okay with hormonal birth control and why we are choosing just as effective alternatives to the IUD, to the NuvaRing, to the pill, okay? Carly is a holistic reproductive health practitioner and a certified fertility awareness educator. And actually, I didn't mention this on the show, but I am going to put Carly's link to her free consult calls in the show notes so you can get on a call with her and figure out what the best option is for you. Is the best option going to be one of the resources we mentioned in the show? Is it going to be working with Carly? Is it going to be hormonal birth control? Truly, this is a consult call where you can just lay all your options out on the table so that you can take the next right first step. Okay. So this episode is a great place to start though. And we are going to call out this misinformation claim. So let's go start getting informed on birth control. This is not your average birth podcast because you are not the average mom. Welcome to Unapologetically Unmedicated. I'm your host, Fierce Lizzie, and I am unapologetic when it comes to normal, physiologic, unmedicated birth. I want you to have your best birth because I know that an empowered birth leads to an empowered motherhood. If you want to be the boss of your birth and do birth your way, it's time to get informed, educated, and empowered. All right, Carly, I'm so excited that we were finally able to schedule this. And we're bringing back this really important topic because I feel like this article came out and everyone was enraged and now everyone's back to business as normal. So we're going to be talking about the Washington Post article. And before we jump into that, Carly, will you tell everyone who you are, where you're from, what you do, all the good stuff?
Sure. My name is Carly Hartwig. I am a holistic reproductive health practitioner and certified fertility awareness educator. I am also a first-time mom. My daughter is about to be 2, which is wild because it feels like I just gave birth to her. I live in Western New York, and I've developed a very strong passion for empowering women in a lot of different ways when it comes to their bodies and their health and their families. That includes empowered birth, which is how I found you years ago. And it also includes informed consent around literally everything, including birth control. So yeah, when I first saw that article, I don't know if there's a word to adequately describe my rage, really.
And like the whole community was outraged, all of us. Now, I want to go back to what you said about empowered birth because all of our listeners are like, yep, that's what I'm here for. I'm here for an empowered birth, right? A lot of them. And we talk about on the podcast a lot the difference between actually being empowered and feeling empowered. And I think that birth control is like the perfect example of that. So here's my take on that is that everyone says birth control is empowering because it gives women an option. It gives them autonomy. They get to be in control, and I'm doing air quotes, of their fertility. But I say that only feels empowering, and it's not actually empowering because you are handing your power, your fertility, literally the power of creating life, like the only reason we're on this earth. Our fertility, and you're handing that over to the pharmaceutical company, and you're relying on a monthly subscription, or you're relying on your OB to insert and remove a device. Like that is handing your power over. So that is not empowering at all.
I could not agree more. And I think where a lot of the drama comes is you have women like us that are out there trying to truly empower women to say, hey, here are all of your options. Birth control is a valid option. Hormonal birth control, we can appreciate the history. We can appreciate perhaps what it did for women, decades ago. And we can tell the world about our experiences and our stories and how it impacted us and about the litany of side effects and significant risks that very few, if any, providers tell us about, right? And it's like I've been accused of being anti-woman because I'm out here trying to give women the informed consent that I know I didn't get for the 15 years I was on birth control. And I'm like, really? Really, that's anti-woman? Because really, what I'm trying to do is give women all of the information so that they can make the best decision for their body. I don't know what that is. You don't know what that is, right? But they can't make that decision without all of the information. And it really is so similar to my thoughts around birth, too. We don't know what the best decision is for another woman, but they definitely can't make it without all of the information.
Absolutely. And I do hear that argument a lot that the empowering part is having the choice. It's not necessarily that one option is more empowering than the other option, but it's that women get to choose, right? Well, how it's not the choice isn't do you want the NuvaRing or do you want the IUD, right? The choice is we have barrier methods and we have pharmaceutical hormonal options, we have pharmaceutical non-hormonal options, and we have fertility awareness. Like those are the options. And each category has more options inside.
And I think that's the kicker is we have these tools, right? And we know that fertility awareness methods, true fertility awareness methods, I'm not talking about the rhythm method, I'm not talking about tracking your period in an app. True fertility awareness methods are valid forms of birth control, period, end of story. But then, because very few OBs know what fertility awareness methods are, mine certainly didn't when I told her about it. She absolutely thought it was the rhythm method. She laughed at me. I think I was. What was I? Gosh, how old am I now? 25, maybe when I went to her and said I wanted to get my IUD out for my health. It's like an experiment to see how this was affecting me. I must have been closer to 30, and she laughed at me and she said, "Okay, start a prenatal because you're going to be back here pregnant, in like 6 months." And I was like, "Really?" So a year later, and when I wasn't pregnant, I tried to educate her about what these methods were, actually tracking my body's biomarkers to identify my fertile window, right? And then what I do during my fertile window, it kind of depends on my intent. If my intent is like, meh, maybe I want kids in the next couple of years, not right now. Maybe I make different decisions during my fertile window. If my intent is absolutely not, I cannot have a baby right now, then I would make other decisions during that fertile window. And I tried to educate her, and she wouldn't hear it. And it's like when that article came out, you know, and there was like a sister article with it that talked more about like misconceptions around birth control, aka things that are real and valid and a lot of doctors don't want to acknowledge. They talked about fertility awareness methods more and how they're not an effective form of birth control. And it's just so frustrating because it's like, just because you don't know about these methods doesn't mean that they're not legitimate forms of birth control.
Yeah. And that was one of the things that came up for me when I read this article. So let's get into the article a little bit. And I have it for me. I highlighted a few things that stuck out to me. But if anyone is living under a rock, and actually I shouldn't say that, we're so in the birth, yeah, and the fertility and the, you know, women's health space that,
yeah,
probably the typical mom maybe didn't even see this article. True. So it's from the Washington Post. Mm-hmm. And I can link to it in the show notes. And the title is Women Are Getting Off Birth Control Amid Misinformation Explosion. And so first of all, the word misinformation is, is actually being used incorrectly a majority of the time. They're using it kind of in a political way and it's just not used correctly. So that alone makes me go, oh, great.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
This article, right? And you and I are both one of these women, right? Where we were on birth control for probably a long time and then decided to get off because of various reasons. So we can relate to a lot of what these women who they interviewed are saying. Mm-hmm. So what was your first like reaction to the article? I'll let you start with one.
Oh gosh. Well, besides major eye rolling, I was angry. And I was angry because it was so much medical gaslighting in one small space that, I mean, it made me want to like throw my phone against a wall and just like rage. Like, and this is the problem. We don't believe women unless it's maybe convenient for us and our narrative. So we have these women literally going on social media, being so vulnerable, sharing about their journeys, their experiences with their own bodies. And we have someone with an MD after their name. And don't you love that they quoted a male in here? Like, really? We got a male OB. But we have someone with an MD after their name saying, oh, nope, I know your body better than you do. So like pure unadulterated rage, because I know so many women who have been in this position. And we just continue to be like screaming from the rooftops and people don't believe us. So that was my first thought. And then, of course, when they start to discount these side effects that are scientifically based, there are real research studies, peer-reviewed articles, like this is not made up. But then they just started to discount, you know, the side effects that are real. So that made me more angry.
So I want to pause for a second because I don't think I knew what the term gaslighting meant until I kind of started doing this like birth advocacy kind of work. Like I just didn't know what that word meant. This happens in your birth, in your prenatal care a lot too. So I mean, Carly, you just gave the perfect example. It's like when a woman goes, and this could be, this happens a lot in like medical professional patient relationship. Mm-hmm. This can happen. This could happen between me and Carly too. Like Carly could gaslight me in this conversation, you know, like it can happen on just like a relational level like that. But where a woman goes, a woman is saying, I feel in my body, I'm feeling this, I'm feeling that, I'm feeling this other thing. And they're just told, no, you're not. Mm-hmm. You're crazy. Or that's it's normal. Or it's not what you think is causing it. It's just because you're a woman or whatever. So that's what gaslighting is. And once you know that definition, you'll see it happening. It's just, I think it happens to us from like, I think we gaslight our children sometimes. Like, you know, when they get hurt, oh, you're fine. Everything's okay. That might not be their true reality. So we grow up hearing that and not really kind of realizing that it's coercive and manipulative.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah.
And there's data to show that it is way more common with women, right? So they've actually done studies and they've sent a man and a woman in who were participants in the studies. They've sent them to their PCPs with the exact same symptoms, right? So they go to their doctor, they say, I'm dealing with XYZ. The woman is told it's all in her head. The man leaves with some sort of, whether it's a prescription or some sort of solution to his ailments. So we have to acknowledge that it is way more common with women. And I think this article is a great example of that, right?
That's really eye-opening. And I can tell you, on the podcast a lot, we talk about kind of the gap that happens between our standard version of maternity care and like the home birth model, midwifery model. And I can tell you, like, when I went and saw a naturopath for the first time, and it was literally probably the first time I've ever not been gaslighted, like at a doctor's appointment, not had to advocate for myself, like was actually told, like, wow, you're right, like that's really hard what you're experiencing, but like you're a good mom and like everything's okay. I had went to her for like postpartum depression. She was like, you're right, like this is not normal. And I was just like, I got in my car and I just cried because I'd never been like listened to like that from a medical professional and like didn't even realize how wrong it was until I experienced the right thing.
Yeah.
So
I had a
this
similar,
article is full of
I had a
gaslighting.
similar journey. Absolutely. And I had a similar journey. And it can be so emotional to finally be validated. And so when you think about why are so many of us talking about birth control on social media? Why are we sharing our stories? Well, it's because our doctors don't believe us. Right. And so it's like when you meet someone on the internet who finally validates you and says, I am so sorry you have experienced this. Even if it's someone you will never meet in your life, it is powerful. Right. And so, they're talking about why are we turning to TikTok and Instagram? Well, that is why. Right. And it's because we are being gaslit left and freaking right. And what's so frustrating is the side effects that we go to our providers to talk about are all in the freaking inserts of the birth control. And they're sitting there and telling us that they're not real. Like, I was on the combined contraceptive for probably 6 to 7 years and then switched to an IUD, right? Because OBs love IUDs, right? It's way easier for them. It's pain-free, which that's a blatant lie, right? How many women have sat in that stirrup chair and just been in excruciating pain while their IUD is inserted, and all we're told is to pop a couple of Advil? Meanwhile, men get a completely different experience for a vasectomy, right? And I mean, it's just like that kind of stuff just kills me. But anyways, I was never told once about any of the side effects. Not once, not the more benign ones like nausea, migraines, things like that. Never some of the scarier ones, right? Like blood clots, like my risk of depression, like my risk of breast cancer, the nutrients it was depleting. And it's like we tell women like, oh, you can just be on birth control long term. There's benefits to long term, just shutting down your reproductive cycle, not ovulating, right? And nobody's talking about the risks. And what kills me, I think, the most is how much hormonal birth control is pushed on women after birth, right? I mean, I've had women come to me in DMs, and again, I'm here to just validate them because I feel very passionate about that. And they'll tell me about how they literally were in the hospital bed about to give birth. Like they hadn't even given birth yet, or they were about to be rolled into the OR room, and their nurse is talking to them about birth control. And I'm like, wait, what? And so we have these women in such a vulnerable time, right? So I think about the vulnerable time of puberty, where we put young girls on the pill to treat, and that's in air quotes, their acne or their heavy periods or their irregular periods, without talking about the fact that irregular and heavier periods are very normal. Right during puberty, so is acne. There are lots of things that we can do to address that. So that's a very vulnerable time in our life. And then we think about how vulnerable we are after birth, and we think about the nutrient depletion after birth and the rates of postpartum depression. And yet we're writing scripts for pills that increase our risk of all of those things. of blood clots, of depression. And it's like, and again, these are highly studied risks, and we're not telling women about them. And then women go on social media and talk about them, and their content's being removed. I don't know if you saw that, but on TikTok, ever since this article, they're strategically removing a whole lot of content of women sharing their stories.
Yeah, I had a comment on your IUD story because I had an IUD also, but I got my IUD after I had had a baby. I assume you got yours before you had a baby.
Before, yeah.
When the IUDs first came out, it was like common knowledge that you only got the IUD if you'd already had a baby. Like they didn't recommend women to have one before they had a baby because the cervix is like so tight. So that's why it was so painful. 'Cause to me, it wasn't that painful. Like it was a little uncomfortable, but that was the advice 10 years ago was you wait until after you had a baby to get the IUD. Now everyone gets the IUD.
Everybody gets the IUD. Yeah, because it's easier, right? You don't have to worry about taking a pill every day.
Yes. And it's almost like it's more effective technically because there's less user error. So it's like
Correct.
they really want us to not be reproducing, I guess. I don't know. And then the other thing that popped in my head too is after my first baby, they convinced me, they told me I needed to be on birth control, but there was only like one, at least this OB that I saw, they only did like, what is it, progestin only? Or
Synthetic progesterone.
I don't think they do that anymore. I think it now it's like, what do you want? We'll pop it in you before you like leave the hospital to go home. So that prescription they had given me was like, I think it's called the mini pill, and it's supposed to be more supportive of breastfeeding and like postpartum hormones. Not that it is, but at least they were considering that instead of just like,
So, you know what's interesting about the mini pill? Because that is very popular postpartum. So, the mini pill only contains progestin, which is synthetic progesterone. And I really want to emphasize synthetic because there's a big misconception out there that it is like progesterone and it's not. So, it works differently on our bodies. And then there's like the combined pill, right? And that has synthetic estrogen as well. So that's the difference there. Now, the synthetic estrogen is where the risk of blood clots come in. And that's why a lot of OBs are kind of steering away from that and going to progestin only. So the IUD, the hormonal IUD, all of the hormonal IUDs are progestin only. And then the mini pill is progestin only as well. So the way that they work is they're thickening our cervical mucus. They thin our uterine lining, right? So they're trying to make it really inhospitable to pregnancy. It doesn't always suppress ovulation. So that's the difference. Like if you took the combined pill, and this is something I never knew, when I had the combined pill and you take that week of placebo pills and you get a bleed, what do most of us think? It's our period. And it's so comforting. And it's like, oh, good. My body is still working. I'm not pregnant. This is amazing. That is not a period. A true period follows ovulation. And the combined pill suppresses ovulation 100% of the time. Now, these progestin-only forms of hormonal birth control, they don't always suppress ovulation. Actually, for most women, they don't. However, they still have significant side effects. And what's interesting is back in the fall, some research came out linking progestin-only birth control to an increased risk of breast cancer. And we're talking like 20 to 60%. I mean, there's kind of different stats with different studies, increase in breast cancer. And for a while, we thought that that was only the case with hormonal birth control that included synthetic estrogen. Now we know it's across the board, right? So we also know that breast cancer risk is higher after giving birth. We don't know the exact mechanisms around that, but we have a lot of data to show that. So we have a woman, she's given birth. We know her risk of breast cancer is higher. I believe it's like for 5 years after each birth. And then we put them on the mini pill because it likely won't impact their breast milk supply, which is not true for all women. It still can. And so then we put them on this mini pill that also increases the risk of breast cancer. And then we sit here and wonder why the rates of breast cancer are skyrocketing in women under 40 who have no family history. So the mini pill is touted as like, oh, it's not going to affect you, or like the IUD, the hormonal IUD. I know for me, my OB was like, oh, it's localized hormones, which is like completely not true. It's not going to affect you. It's localized. And I'm like, Wait, what? So I do think it's important to know that progestin-only birth control still has side effects. And the most important thing with progestin-only is it has to be taken at the same time. It has to be taken perfectly. And think about being postpartum. I mean, I'm only coming out of my postpartum like haze and fog. And I'm 2 years out at this point. So I think about like those first few months, would I have been able to remember to take a pill at the exact same time every day? Probably not. And if you've heard about Opill, that's the over-the-counter birth control that a lot of women are celebrating. And I
Lot
am,
of influencers are like
yep,
marketing this right now,
huge. Yeah,
which is
yes.
really scary
It
and
is.
almost is like, what good timing for this article to come out.
It?
But we'll come back to that in a second because I wrote that.
No, it's curious, but the Opill, which is an over-counter hormonal birth control, is also progestin only. And I just wonder, do people know how important it is to be taken at the exact same time every day? Maybe not. Because the article, the Washington Post article is all about the effectiveness of birth control. But we have to remember that no form of birth control is 100% effective. And yeah.
Yeah, I told you that I took the mini pill. I think I did it for like a month for that reason. I could never remember to take it, so I just didn't ever go get it filled. So then what did I do? Because I can't remember the pill, is then I went and got the IUD. And I got the copper IUD, which is like, oh, it's non-hormonal, it's better, but it's not risk-free. And does it still
No.
mess with your hormones?
The copper IUD is funny because I think so many women will like come to me and they'll ask like, what is the best form or the lowest risk form of hormonal birth control? And I just tell them like every form has risk except fertility awareness methods. I mean, the only risk there is like body literacy. So, but there are truly risks to every kind. And the thing about the copper IUD is, I think we need to remember that it works by creating inflammation in our bodies. And I think most of us know at this point, it's 2024, we know that inflammation is the root cause of a whole lot of health issues, right? So that is how it works. And it's working by creating that inflammation to prevent implantation, thickens the cervical mucus, so sperm can't travel. But it can dislodge, it can perforate the uterus, it can actually increase your flow. So like a lot of women find that it increases their heavy flow, their cramps get worse. And I'm like, well, yep, because you're causing inflammation in your body. So there's a little bit of like anecdotal evidence around like copper toxicity risks. But either way, I think it's touted as this like amazing, safer option. And I'm just over here being like, well, there's still risk there.
Yeah, and that was why I ended up taking it out, is the heavy bleeding. It was like so heavy and my cramps were so bad. Like I would be at work and I would have to like stop mid-sentence because I would like double over. And yeah, looking back, I had so much inflammation. Like my face changed when I took the IUD out and my inflammation, went away. All right, I want to look at this article and I highlighted, I mean, basically the whole thing is what did I feel that we need to talk about? And I'm just saying this that I think it's really important. I teach my moms inside of Unmedicated Academy this. You need to hear those red flags and see those examples so that when they come up in your real life, you can identify them. So we are gonna, I'm gonna read a few things that I highlighted from this awful, awful article. And we'll just talk about it. The first thing, we kind of already touched on the misinformation in the title, right? Women are getting off control amid misinformation explosion. And we already, I totally, they're using the word misinformation in the wrong way because the information that you are sharing, that the women in the article are sharing is not, it's not false. It's not false information. I truly think this is mainstream media's attempt at kind of stopping this pipeline, right? We see women learning about how their bodies work and they're leaving big pharma. They're no longer, tapping into pharmaceutical birth control. A lot of them are gardening now and they're making their own food. They're leaving big food. They are having babies at home. They're leaving the medical system that way. A lot of them are like, hey, wait a minute. I'm really feminine and I have this cycle and the workforce is not for me either. And I truly think that that's the point of this article is I think a lot of women have been talking about this probably for a long time. But now that we have the internet,
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
We're not just in these small communities. I truly think that this is a way of getting the women who have not found us yet to be like, oh, that's misinformation. They're crazy, right? How many times are women called crazy? And like, how did you get informed on this? Was it the internet?
It was the internet. So yeah, I mean, I was on like my own kind of holistic health journey working with a functional medicine practitioner after being told I was crazy for years by my PCP. You know, it was all in my head. My blood work looked great. And I'm like, okay, well, I'd rather you look at what I'm telling you about what I know is not right with my own body, the body that I've lived in my entire life, instead of looking at a piece of paper, you know, but that's not how it works. So, I was on my kind of journey and I saw an influencer, talking about this, you know, non-hormonal birth control by tracking your temperature and tracking your cervical mucus. And I was like, wait, what? Like, I don't have to be on a pill or an IUD to prevent pregnancy. And then I got my IUD out and I was a literal different person. I mean, immediately. It was pretty freaking crazy.
Yeah. I had the same experience. I told you I got my copper IUD out. Now, this is before I really know about anything. I'm still like a baby at this point. I mean, I was already a mom, but I already knew about unmedicated birth and that sort of thing. And I got the copper IUD because it was non-hormonal, but I wanted to switch because I wanted more control over it. I was like, I want this thing out. It's making me bleed so much. Maybe I'll go back to hormonal birth control. And I did the ring. And the ring has like that's like one of the worst ones, I think, in terms of like risks I've heard when I hear some of these horror stories. It's always the ring, it's always NuvaRing. But same thing. I think I used it for 2 weeks and I literally went from normal to crazy. And then as soon as I took it out, stopped using it. Yeah. I was back to normal self.
And that's the thing. It's like, we feel so different that like, we have to share this with people in our lives. Like, I remember this was what, 6, 7 years ago now that I got my IUD out. And I remember talking to two of my closest friends about it. And they were just like, wait, what? Like, you're going to get pregnant. And I was like, no, I'm not going to get pregnant. And so I tried to explain it to them, but like, it's so foreign, you know, because we're not taught this stuff, because it's a lot easier to just write a script for birth control when someone's 13, instead of trying to figure out what's actually going on with their bodies or teaching them about their bodies. And so I think we have this movement because those of us that have been here, that have made the decision to trust our bodies, trust our innate power within us, right? We learn so much. We get off the birth control. We feel like different women. And then we can't not talk about it. We have to talk about it. Or like, even some of the side effects, like, we don't talk about those. And do you love that in the article, they kind of like, they like mentioned a few of like the really, you know, benign ones, like weight gain, or what did they mention? Like libido and things like that. And I'm like, okay, are we not going to talk about the breast cancer risk, the depression risk, the blood clot risk? And it's like, no one's talking about this. So we have to, right? Like, I want to educate all of my friends about this because I love them and I care about them. And I need them to know this information. So that's why we have this movement of real information, not misinformation, on the internet.
I mean, right out the gate, the article is like, the first line is talked about, I highlighted this part, right-wing commentators claiming that some birth control can lead to infertility, women blaming weight gain on the pill, testimonials complaining about depression and anxiety. Like, those are not, again, they just very lightly cover some of the risks, which is very typical in how our healthcare is in all areas.
Yeah, true.
But I thought of this, like, I underlined this and I wrote this note because it's, I feel like, and I haven't done extensive research, but I feel like hormonal birth control does lead to infertility. And
it's definitely,
in the article is saying that no, there's no evidence. There's no evidence that shows this. But I want to compare this real quick to birth. Okay. So this, they say the same thing about birth. They say the epidural does not lead to a cesarean. There is no evidence that shows the epidural increases your risk of cesarean. However, if we look at the risks of the epidural, it doesn't increase your risk of cesarean, but risks include slowing down labor, which slow labor can
Exactly.
result in a cesarean. It can cause fetal distress. Fetal distress results in a cesarean. It can cause fever. Fever can result in a cesarean. So it's like they've taken the evidence and they've skewed it to be kind of like whatever
Exactly.
they want it to look like. Have you come across any evidence, like actual, I'm rolling my eyes here because we know that the evidence is everything, right? Is there really truly no evidence that birth control leads to infertility?
So what I see happening most often, and I think what the research supports most often, is that we know that hormonal birth control shrinks our ovaries, also our clitoris, if anyone's curious about that. So if you need another reason to get off, but it shrinks our ovaries and it depletes our ovarian reserves. And this can be pretty significant. So I think there's a lot of myths out there that it's not doing anything. And as soon as you get off, you'll be able to get pregnant right away. And I tell women, don't even try. Please don't try right away. Give your body a solid 6 months minimum to see what's going on, because those depleted ovarian reserves and those shrunken ovaries, it can take 6, 12, even 18 months to get back to baseline. Now, there's this idea that birth control preserves your fertility because it preserves your eggs, because you're not releasing an egg every
Little
month, right? That's
pauses
not,
and
yeah. No, that is not accurate whatsoever. But what is accurate is women are coming off, and then because of the lower ovarian reserves, the smaller ovaries, they're not getting pregnant right away. And then what I see is they're pushed to infertility treatments instead of giving their bodies time to get back to homeostasis. Because even if you have the implant or you get an IUD, you get the injection, whatever it is, and you stop it, there are metabolites that hang out in your liver, that hang out in your organs, that really come together like in your fat cells. And it can take a while for these metabolites to get out of your body, right? So I think that's where we see it more often. So it's almost like a temporary, like a short-term infertility or sub-fertility, if that's what you want to call it. But we also know that there are women out there who have been on birth control for 2 decades. Maybe they started when they were a teenager, and then they did struggle even a year later to get pregnant and then had to pursue fertility treatment. So again, this is where I think it comes to your individual lived experience is always going to be more important than whatever data shows. You know what I mean?
Not only what you said, women saying, oh, I can't get pregnant, I can't get pregnant, I can't get pregnant. All of these women in our kind of age bracket who are on hormonal birth controls at 15, 16, 17 years old. I mean, just put two and two together, it's
I
ridiculous.
know, I
But
know, right?
also, when we look at physiology, just like you said, like hormonal birth control messes up our physiology. How do we expect it to all of a sudden work? And with no interruptions, and it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. But the medical system controls the evidence, controls the article from the Washington Post.
Exactly. It's
Another one I highlighted in here was we talked about the side effects, how they just kind of glazed over that, and how they mentioned side effects that, like, you and I are not worried about bloating and like weight gain, like those things are like blips on the radar. Like, we're not worried about that. I mean, I don't want to be like harsh, but death is a side effect of hormonal birth control. Like, you watched The Business of Birth Control, right?
Yeah, highly recommend all women watch.
Yes, absolutely. If you go to the Business of Birth Control's website, I think if you just search that, it's either the Business of Birth or the Business of Birth Control, because they have both documentaries. Both of those are
So
a
good.
must watch. You can rent
100%.
them. Every once in a while, they have them for free. So if you follow them on
Yeah,
Instagram,
they're great.
you can kind of see when they're free. But that was the first time that I very much have opted out of all pharmaceuticals now. So I didn't feel compelled to go watch that. It's just like, oh, Big Pharma has their hands on it, then I don't want anything to do with it. But watching that, and they highlight the stories of women's families of women who died, I was just like, it's just
I know.
insane. Never
I
would
know. And you know, yeah, and I
I don't
follow
think our mothers would
a
have put us on birth control had
no.
they known that. you know?
And I follow some OBs just to kind of see, with the other side things. And they just, of course, like smash the documentary and tear it to pieces. And I'm like, you're literally talking about, again, a family's lived experience of losing their daughter, their sister, their wife, and you're trying to say that's not valid? Like, I just don't understand. And then we think about the depression risk. I mean, there's literally, and this is hard data, this is evidence, this is research, this is not made up, but hormonal birth control increases our risk of depression by up to 92%. 92%. And it's even worse with young girls. So if you go on when you are in puberty, in adolescence, so teenager, 11, 12-year-olds, they're going on for their acne or whatever it is, that actually increases your risk of depression in your whole lifetime by 130%. Even if that young girl decides to go off a year later, just that act, right, messing with your reproductive system during such a vulnerable time, 130% increased risk of depression over their lifetime. Like, how is that not talked about? How are doctors writing a script for a 12-year-old little girl and not educating parents of the risks? It's absolutely terrifying.
And we wonder why we're kind of in this mental health crisis. Well,
Yep.
one thing, one contribution to such high rates of postpartum depression or
Yes.
even just
Yep.
depression, anxiety in our general population. Like, everyone has
Yeah.
a therapist now. Like, it's not
I mean, it's
normal. It's
wild.
not normal. That is a
Right.
result of a lot of things, but this being one of them. I cannot believe those
Right.
percentages. And then back to, we already talked about informed consent. I don't care if the risk of death is less than 1%. I want to know that. Like, I want to know
Me
that.
too.
I want to
Yeah.
know that. We want to be fully informed. Otherwise, we would have never said okay to those things if we had known.
Never.
Yeah. And
Never.
I get
Not
that
in a
all the
million
time
years.
from my clients, and I'm sure you get that all the time from your clients. If I would have known, I would have never
I
done
know.
it.
I
Because
know.
women our age, done with hormonal birth control, but done with big pharma and all of those things. And now we're having to do all this work just to like bring our bodies back into balance. And it's not like
Exactly.
a quick, easy fix. I was complaining the other day. I was like, I gotta put my castor oil pack on. Like, all these things I have to do just to like make my body work the way that it's
I
supposed to
know.
work. But our society
I
just
know.
works against it all the time.
Yeah. I do. And you're so right. I hear it all the time. If I had known, I never would have gone on. Or like parents, that are saying, I never would have put my teenage daughter on. And it's like, this is why we will not be silenced by this article. And in fact, I think a lot of us, it's like it gave us more resolve to keep talking about this and talk about it louder.
Yeah, because I say this all the time that I'm like in this birth bubble. And same with you, you're in this bubble
I am.
of aware, informed women. And then an article like this comes out and you're like, oh wait, we are the minority. We are such a small
I
percentage.
know.
We need to keep talking about it, which is why we're talking about
Yes,
it
we
right
do.
now.
Yes, we do.
Okay, so another line that I highlighted, it says, people are putting themselves out there as experts on birth control and speaking to things that the science does not bear out, says the male OBGYN that they
I
interview.
love that. Don't you love that? Oh,
It
God.
also says he's a family planning expert with the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, which is just like laughable because natural family planning is the name of one of the alternatives. So I almost feel like they put that in there
I know.
to
I
confuse
know. I
people.
think so too. Yeah.
And then he says, I'm seeing those direct failures of this misinformation. And so he's talking about alternatives to birth control, right? He's talking about failures of fertility awareness or natural family planning. And he is also saying the science does not bear out. Is there any science? Has anyone dedicated time and money to researching how women's bodies works in terms of natural family planning or fertility awareness? No, right?
There's not been a lot, but I will say the little bit of research that's out there shows the efficacy of true fertility awareness methods, right? Real methods. You got to pick one. You got to follow the rules. You can't just be like, oh, I'm going to check for cervical mucus here and there. I'm going to maybe take my temperature a couple days a month. Like, no, you have to be consistent. You have to follow a method. But the efficacy is matching or better than forms of hormonal birth control. So yeah,
Without
isn't that
any
crazy?
side effects. Without
Isn't
the
that
side effects,
crazy?
the biggest side effect would be getting pregnant, which is a risk you take with birth control as well. Like it's
Right. And that's, yes, I completely agree. I think we forget that no form of birth control is 100%. None. Not one. Except, I mean, abstinence, right? That's it.
Correct.
So we have to remember that. Like, everyone's like, oh, it's so risky. And of course, they try to politicize it, which, I mean, that was just so ridiculous. But it's
Yeah.
like, we have to remember that there's always a risk of pregnancy. But fertility awareness methods are legitimate, and they put, like, somewhere else in the article, they put natural, methods in quotes. And I'm like, why is this in quotes? Like, these are legitimate things. Like you said, natural family planning, fertility awareness methods, like these actually work. They are not the rhythm method. And I'm sure that's what a lot of OBs think. When I talked to my OB about coming off and using a fertility awareness method, she never heard that phrase. So we have to remember that our OBs are not necessarily experts in this stuff, right?
Correct. Yeah. Now, and I think a common misconception is that when we talk about tracking like fertility awareness or tracking our cycle, they think we're talking about the Clue app or
Yes. Yeah.
the apps on the phone. And it's so much deeper than that. Now, you mentioned rhythm method. Can you explain the differences maybe between rhythm method and these apps and true fertility awareness methods?
Yes. Yeah. So the rhythm method is basically what all of these free fertility tracking apps use, right? They are looking at a calendar and they are assuming that your cycles, if they're 29 days, that they're always going to be 29 days. And if you ovulate around, day 14, which pretty much 3% of our population has like a 28-day cycle with a day 14 ovulation, right? Which is also how due dates are still calculated. So let's just take that in for a second. 3% of our population, 28-day cycle, day 14 ovulation. The rest of us have some variability, and variability can be very normal with our cycles. And so the rhythm method is looking at a calendar and saying, okay, here's when you're going to be fertile. It is insanely dangerous. We know it does not work. If you are trying to avoid pregnancy, you're taking a big risk there because we do not always ovulate on the same day. We are not robots. Ovulation is very, very sensitive to a lot of environmental factors because it's taxing on our bodies, right? So if we're super stressed, if we are really, really sick, if we traveled to a different time zone, if we binge drank alcohol, I mean, these things can all delay ovulation. So we cannot look at a calendar and assume that we are always going to ovulate around the same day every month. We also have to remember that we are fertile for more than one day a cycle because of our cervical mucus. Our cervical mucus can keep sperm alive for up to 5 days. So that's how we have a 6-day fertile window each cycle. And a lot of these apps don't take that into consideration, right? So the rhythm method, I agree with any OB out there, it does not work.
Right.
That is not our
They're
only option. Right.
right
Yes,
with that. They
I don't
just,
disagree with that. Yeah.
we're just speaking different languages when we're saying it works and they're saying it doesn't. And the same is true for like women who use like the ovulation strips, right? Like that is not an accurate thing. And this is so funny. This just like dawned on me that the rhythm method is very similar. And I think a lot of women get trapped here and then they're like, oh, it doesn't work, right? It's the same with like birth, right? It's the same with like, okay, I'm gonna have an unmedicated birth in the hospital. And they go in and they try to have their unmedicated birth, but yet they're not putting any of the supports in that actually support physiology. And they're still handing over all of their power and getting all of their information outside of their body to some expert. The app is the expert. The ovulation strip is the expert. Like they're not actually learning about what's going on
Exactly.
in their body, and
Right.
that's why it's failing.
Exactly. Yes. And I tell women this all the time, an app will never know your body better than you do. I don't care how fancy the algorithms are, right? We know natural cycles is a big thing with influencers right now. They must pay a lot for marketing. And what I tell women is that is not a fertility awareness method because natural cycles uses, and Daisy, there's a lot of them, they use your basal body temperature, right? Which basal body temperature is one of our biomarkers of fertility. And after ovulation, we will see a shift, a rise, because in the second half of our cycle, our progesterone is our dominant hormone. And that's like our warming hormone, right? So it kind of revs up our metabolism and thereby increasing our body temperature, our basal body temperature. So tracking basal body temperature is amazing, but you can't track it alone because your cervical mucus is your real-time sign of fertility. Your basal body temperature is retroactive. It confirms ovulation after it happens. So then we have these, you know, scientists out there saying that the algorithm of natural cycles is incredible. And I'm thinking, do you have any certified fertility awareness educators in your board of scientists that are making these algorithms? Because if you did, they would tell you that this is not a reliable or safe way to prevent unwanted pregnancy. So it's like, then we have these companies kind of taking advantage of this idea of women trying to learn their bodies, but they're trying to make it seem like it's too hard for us to learn our bodies without an app, right?
Yep.
And so femtech is booming. And it's like, mm-hmm. you know, I'm glad it's raising awareness about fertility awareness methods, but these apps aren't fertility awareness methods, and they're not reliable if you are trying to avoid birth control. There are tons of methods out there. You can research them. There's methods that just track cervical mucus. There's methods that are symptothermal, so cervical mucus and basal body temperature. Then there's even symptohormonal methods, right? Where you're like checking your metabolites in urine and things like that. So there are lots of options out there. You just have to pick one, and then you have to follow the rules if you're trying to avoid pregnancy. And the cool thing is these methods can also help you achieve pregnancy if that's your goal, because yeah. they're making sure that you're actually timing intercourse correctly. Like, you brought up ovulation strips, and I feel like so many OBs out there are just like, yeah, just check for ovulation, and then that's when you time it. And it's like, well, actually, ovulation strips are not 100% guarantee that you're about to ovulate. Women can have multiple LH surges, right? That's what they're looking at. They're trying to capture an LH surge. You can have multiple LH surges. You can miss your surge, right? You can surge and then not ovulate right away. And it's like, we just do such a disservice not teaching women how their bodies work. And then when those of us are out there trying to teach women how their bodies work, we're being accused of misinformation, yep. right? So it's like,
yep.
oh man, this article, I mean, it's been weeks and I'm still so angry about it.
I know. It's hard out there for women. It's so hard. Like, we literally are like women living in a man's world. And like, even when we talk about the research and the data and the medical knowledge and training, like, it's all basically based on a men's body mm-hmm. and men's yep. health. And the same with the workforce. We already talked about that. That's based on a man's yep. cycle. Like,
right.
We're just out here just trying to be women. And it's like, I know. Society doesn't like that at all. It makes it really hard for us to be true to ourselves as women and as mothers yep. too. And I wanted to, when you were talking about these apps, it just made me think of how everything is always, how can we monetize this? How can we profit from this? Mm-hmm. Right. It's like, oh, women want to learn more about their bodies. Well, let's figure out how we can, corporates can come in and, yep. and control that more. Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've also heard this, that those apps are selling the data from the apps to like third parties. Have you heard about mm-hmm. this?
A lot of them do. Yeah. There are very few apps that I would even feel comfortable putting my information into. 100%. That is absolutely accurate.
Can you explain why? Because when I first heard this, I was like, I don't understand. I had to hear it from an expert like you. Explain why, like, what, like, who cares if someone, some corporation knows when I'm ovulating? Like, why is, I mean, it's not good for someone to have your information, period. But like, why should women care about that?
Well, honestly, in this day and age, depending on kind of where you live, that information can be used against you. So let's say you achieve pregnancy and you're using the Clue app or whatever app you're using, and then you unfortunately miscarry, right? I mean, there's a lot of kind of crazy stuff going on right now in our country, and that information can be used against you, really. So I think that's a big part of it. But I do think there's obviously the privacy piece of it. Mm-hmm. And I know, I mean, I talk to my husband, he's in the tech world. I talk to him all the time. And he's like, it's not just these apps. All of these apps are taking our data and data mining and all this stuff. And I'm like, I get that. But when I'm tracking my menstrual cycle, like, that just feels so like sacred and personal to me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and I would definitely be mindful of
tracking
that.
Your sex life on there. And
yeah,
like, why would third parties want that information? I was thinking too, from like a marketing perspective, like, they'll know what to market to us when, if they know where we are at in our cycle.
That's very true.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, think about like the apps, because a lot of these apps will then transition to pregnancy apps. Mm-hmm. And I think about like when I tracked my pregnancy in an app and I started getting formula samples sent to me, mm-hmm. right? Like think about that kind of stuff, right? So mm-hmm. yes, I do think there's a piece of that too. And then I also think that they're using this data to try to prove that their algorithms work. And that's just skewed too, because what I find is a lot of women who like accidentally get pregnant using these period tracking apps. And I try to specify that these are not fertility awareness method apps. These are period tracking apps. So a lot of them will use them and then accidentally get pregnant and then they stop tracking stuff. So that's not going into the algorithms, you know, so the algorithm isn't realizing that it messed up. So yeah, I think they try to use it to their advantage as well. But
it's all 100%. It's all, the motive is making money. Corporate, you know,
100%.
The purpose isn't for you to have more power and autonomy.
No.
Whatsoever.
No. They're not trying to give you body literacy. They are not. And you can't get that from an app. They're trying to make money.
Okay. Yeah, correct. And so if someone is listening and they maybe have never tracked before, they've never done any of this, what is the best place for someone to start? Because for me, it was always like, that is so complicated and I don't think I can figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what you said, they kind of are brainwashing us to think that of ourselves. But
yeah,
where is the best place to start?
So I like to tell women that, like, I think of it like breastfeeding. Like breastfeeding is, to me, the most natural thing in the world. Mm-hmm. It was always a priority for, you know, my family. It was always something I was going to do with my daughter. It rocked me. It was the hardest thing I've ever done. I had no idea, right? And so now I can look back and say, oh yeah, breastfeeding is the most natural thing in the world. And it's also a learned skill. And I needed expert women around me, right, to help me learn this skill. That is the same exact thing with fertility awareness methods. They are natural. We are meant to learn our bodies. We are meant to stay in sync with our infradian rhythm, right? We don't just have a circadian rhythm, which is, to your point, everything you mentioned about like our workforce and the way that we live as our society. That is to benefit a circadian rhythm, which is what men have. We have the infradian rhythm as well, right? Which is secular. And it's like, there's just not a lot for us out there. But anyways, so what I tell women is fertility awareness methods, most natural thing in the world, but they are also a learned skill. And you can self-teach. There are methods out there. So I recommend, if someone's curious, they start with a book like Taking Charge of Your Fertility. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've heard of that, right? And so that's a really great place to start. It's a very comprehensive book, so it can feel a little intimidating. Right. But she covers your entire reproductive, you know, cycle. And there's even like some great information there about charting postpartum. Which I do really, really recommend women look into. I know there's a lot of pressure to go right back on birth control. I've heard women say they were in the OR room for a cesarean birth and a nurse brought up birth control, right? Right? Or like they just pushed their baby out and a nurse brought up birth. And I'm like, wait, what? And yeah, I mean, that is such a vulnerable time. That is our biggest hormone drop of our entire life after mm-hmm. we give birth. And then we need to talk about all of these side effects, right? Including like depression, including the risk of breast cancer. Because our risk of breast cancer also tends to be highest 5 to 10 years after birth. So anyways, all of that to say, if you are a postpartum, I want you to know that you can absolutely chart the return of your fertility with a method. You do not have to go back on birth control. But anyways,
if you're pregnant and you're listening to this, like,
start learning now.
Start learning now and that decision now. And when they ask you right then and there, you're not going to get pregnant within 6 months.
I know.
No, I didn't mean to say 6 months. You can get pregnant within 6 months. Yes. I'm sorry, but 6 weeks. Like, you don't have to decide right then and there.
Exactly. Take some time to think about it and do a little research, because I guarantee your provider is not telling you about all of the risks.
Yeah.
But so Taking Charge of Your Fertility has a great section on postpartum. So that tends to be like one of the best ways to self-teach. There's also a really great book out there called The Fifth Vital Sign, which I really love, by Lisa Hendricks and Jack. So that's another option. But then there's also this power in learning from other women, right? Just like I was mentioning with breastfeeding. So for me, you know, I self-taught reading Taking Charge of Your Fertility. It was wonderful. It taught me so much. And then I had the opportunity to work with a certified instructor, and that helped me so much, especially because I was postpartum. So I was trying to, you know, chart the return of my fertility. So I would say those books are great starting points. And then seeking out, you know, certified instructors if you really want that more one-on-one coaching to learn from another woman, which I think there's a lot of power there.
Yeah. And that's how we were meant to do it. That's how women did it before there were apps, before there was birth control. I mean, we could say the same about birth. And I just can see 100%. The value in that as your chart, like literally a mom could bring her chart to you and be like, I don't understand what's going on here. I don't know how to read this. I made this mistake. Yeah. You know, so you're not going to get that from a book, from an app. You're only going to get that from another human teaching you.
Exactly. That was invaluable for me postpartum, like having an expert to go to, because things are real weird postpartum. There's like no normal. I think there's a big myth out there that if you're breastfeeding, that serves as birth control, and it does not. No. And I will tell women as often as I can that I was nursing around the clock. We bed shared. We did all the things. I didn't do bottles. We didn't do pacifiers. And I ovulated at 2.5 months postpartum. I got my period at 3 months postpartum, and I've gotten my cycle ever since. Two and a half months.
That was my experience too. Not with my first. With my first, I didn't start my cycle until I got that copper IUD in at 18 months postpartum. So I would have
probably Isn't that crazy? Went yeah. further
if I hadn't started all that inflammation stuff that we talked about, right? And then with my second and third, it was like 4 and 5 months postpartum. And I want to say that was flip-flop. So I started 4 months postpartum while I was tandem nursing. I was nursing a toddler and a baby and bed sharing. We weren't doing bottles. We were doing pacifiers. Everything I say will give you that, you know, lactational, what is it called?
Amenorrhea. Yeah.
Yes. Where you don't, you know, you're protected from, no. Just not always. Yep. Do you think that's because we're so fertile? Like, why do you think that is? Do you think, that's a good sign that your period came, or is that a bad sign? Like, you know,
I get that question all the time. I think that a piece of it is nutrient repletion. So you think about how depleted we are postpartum, right? We can be nutrient depleted for up to a decade postpartum, which again, you go back on birth control at 6 weeks or maybe in the OR, they put it, you know, an IUD in there. And that's also depleting your nutrients, ladies. Mm-hmm. So let's remember that. But I do think that's a big piece of it, because there's obviously like bio-individuality at play, of course. But I was so focused on eating, you know, on eating enough, on getting a ton of protein, on getting a ton of healthy fats. Like, I did so much freezer prep and things like that. I read The First 40 Days, which like changed my complete outlook on eating. And then I think in general, our culture is very bounce back, right? We want you to lose that baby weight in 2 months. We want you to be on that diet and start working out. And so I do think that is a piece of it, because again, you think about how taxing ovulation is on our bodies. And when we are that depleted, I think it's very intuitive. I think our bodies are so wise. And they know, like, you know what, right now, we're not going to add that into the mix. But yeah, it is wild. It is so variable. And I feel so bad, because I love working with postpartum women, because it's so, like, you know, it's so variable out there. And everyone asks me, like, what's normal? And I'm like, well, I'm sorry, there is truly no normal.
Yeah, there's not. So, can you share, like, do you do a certain method? Or do you do all the methods? Are you?
Yeah. So I'm certified in the Justice method of fertility awareness, and that can be cervical mucus only. So only tracking cervical mucus, or symptothermal. And symptothermal, I like tracking the BBT as well to give me that peace of mind, right? You kind of have like a double check of confirming ovulation. And because we are very much trying to avoid pregnancy in this phase of life, I really like using a symptothermal method. And there's some research showing that that's actually the most effective in terms of preventing pregnancy and using your body as birth control. So those are the methods that I'm certified to teach in.
That's good to know. And is there a actual number of methods? Like, do you know the names of all the methods, or are there like endless?
Oh yeah. No, there are quite a few. Yeah. So, I don't know if you want me to like name them, but there's Marquette. Yeah.
Yeah.
Marquette is a really popular one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marquette's a really popular symptohormonal. So that's, you know, you're peeing on, like hormone tests, and you're trying to gauge like where you are with like the metabolites from your hormones. And then I would say Billings I don't know if you've heard of that. Billings and Creighton are some of the more popular methods as well. But you got to pick one. And that's what I tell women. Do a little research. There are a lot of methods out there, but you have to pick one and you have to follow the rules to that method
To that
if you want to use
specific
this
method.
as birth control.
Yes.
Yes. Yep.
And then how do you support moms? What offers or services do you provide?
So right now I offer one-on-one coaching. So basically we would work together, like 3 6 months, and I would teach you the method. You would chart, and then we would go through your charts together, make any corrections needed, make sure you're really understanding the method, and then you kind of graduate and I send you on your way. And then obviously I'm here for any additional support if things change, with your goals or things like that. I will soon be offering a group coaching program. So if women don't necessarily want that like super one-on-one time, but they do want to learn from like a certified instructor. And then hopefully soon I will have some courses out in the world too. It's been very hard, as to navigate building a business while being a full-time mom and doing all the things. But that's my goal someday because I really want this to be accessible. And I will tell you, there are a lot of us out there, instructors that offer sliding scales and things like that. And we really try to meet you where you're at because we genuinely want to teach women how to learn about their bodies. Like we get into this because we're passionate about it, not because we're trying to whatever. So
It
there are
changed
a lot
our
of great
life.
instructors out
It
there.
changed your life, and you just want to pay that
I
forward too.
did.
And I think this is
100%.
so important to distinguish because, we'll talk about, oh, Big Pharma just wants to take your money and blah, blah, blah. And then I don't know if you've gotten this comment before, but I have. And like, oh, you're just shilling on medicated birth. Like, you're just trying to make money off of. And it's like, well, I do need to make a living wage when I spend a lot of my
Sure.
time on this, but that's not the point. And you perfectly illustrated this here with your services is you teach the mom for 3 months, you said. I think that's what you said. And that mom has a skill that she can use for the
Exactly.
rest of her life. And if you are
The rest of
relying
life, yeah.
on hormonal birth control or these apps, you're relying on that for the rest of your life. You are a big pharma
Exactly.
customer forever. You
Yeah.
literally have to go get permission from your OB to have a baby if you have an IUD. And it's just ridiculous. And so I think
Yeah.
that is the huge difference there is, big pharma and whatever, medicalized birth, medicalized fertility. They want you to be their customer forever for your
Yeah.
whole reproductive life. We want you
Yeah.
to learn the skill and go and be. We don't
Exactly.
want
Exactly. No, exactly.
to
Yeah.
see you
100%.
again.
You can even charting can even help you as you enter perimenopause, right? Like as you start to have some kind of weird things now with your body, it can naturally help you find ways to alleviate any of the symptoms you're dealing with. I mean, this is a lifelong skill and you just have to learn it once.
It's not just getting pregnant or preventing pregnancy. Like there's so
No.
much more benefits than just having control over those things.
Yep. It's body literacy. 100%.
Love that. Anything else you want to share before we hop off?
I think we covered a lot.
You
I
did
just, I wish we could get this stuff into a Washington Post article. Like, does anyone know anyone that works there? Because come on, like, let's have the other side of this as well. Because that was just, it was frustrating. But honestly, I feel really encouraged by the backlash I've seen. And again, to your point, I do live in this little bubble of my social media, and it's really comfortable there. But it is really, I think it did, it lit something under a lot of us to be like, nope. We're not taking this sitting down. So I hope it continues. I really hope we don't lose the momentum. And I can tell you, I will not quiet down about this stuff. If anything, I'm just going to get louder and louder until people listen.
And we need that because when I see you speaking up, that gives me a lot of courage to speak up. That gives me courage to go do some research if I'm too scared to speak up. At least, there's so much opportunity for change there. So thank you for everything that you
100%.
do. I
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on.
hope that you learned a lot from this episode. I hope this opened up your eyes to many topics that are important for women like you to understand. And it is not a lie that the mainstream media and our modern day society is trying to silence this message. It would mean so much if you shared this podcast episode either on your social media. You can go ahead and tag me at Unapologetically Unmedicated and I will reshare it. Or just share it with a mom friend. Share it with your pregnant friends, because this message is being shut down and painted as misinformation in our mainstream media, and women need to hear about this at least, in the very least, to know that there are more options to research outside of just what is being put in front of you. Outside of if you go in to have your baby and they say, oh, what option of birth control are you thinking? This pharmaceutical, this pharmaceutical, this pharmaceutical, when there are so many more options than that. Hey, thanks for hanging out with me today on the podcast. If this episode gave you confidence in being more unapologetic, if you felt more empowered from listening to the show, it would mean so much if you took just 30 seconds to leave a rating and review. This is how we can get the show out to more moms who need it so that they can join us in the Empowered Moms Club too. I'll be back again with another episode in just a couple days. Don't forget to subscribe so that you don't miss a thing. Until then, stay fierce, friend.